from Monday through Wednesday, there was a social media meltdown. I had folks reaching out to me who had heard about it from, you know, a designer they work with. There was a huge, mostly negative reaction on social media to the decision to prohibit disintermediation. And it's interesting because if you weren't looking at X and Reddit and other platforms, and you were only looking at our data, you would have not seen any indication of any sort of negative reaction.
Welcome to Two-Sided, the Marketplace podcast, brought to you by ShareTribe.
Hello and welcome. I am Stuart, CMO at ShareTribe, and I am your host. Surprise, surprise, a special bonus episode of Two-Sided. And in this episode, we'll dig into Dribbble and their bold pivot from an online show-and-tell design community into a lead generation marketplace. And all of that without destroying the network. I do this together with Dribbble CEO, Konstantin Anastasakis, who turned out to be a listener of the show. And he reached out because he thought this might be an interesting experience to share with you, our listeners. And honestly, I couldn't agree more. By the way, bonus episode, I'm saying that simply because season four of Two-Sided has not taken any shape or form. But when Konstantin reached out, I saw this opportunity was just too valuable to let it pass. And I didn't want to wait until we were going to release a new season because chances are it would be significantly outdated. Anyway, let's get back to the important part, Dribbble. So if you don't know Dribbble, by the way, three Bs, D-R-I-B-B-B-L-E, Dribbble started as a curated invite-only social platform where designers shared visual work to get inspired, get feedback, and get discovered. And over time, it grew into one of the biggest visual and digital designer communities and portfolio sites on the web. And it is this niche community aspect that makes Dribbble and this shift actually such an interesting case. Lots of things could have gone wrong, and actually some of them did in a way. But that's all I want to say about that. You'll hear everything in the actual interview. I just want to say that if you're building a marketplace for professionals, creators, or any niche with high community aspects built on trust, then this conversation could be immensely valuable. It's essentially a compact playbook on how to sequence monetization, measuring what matters, designing for the real power users of your marketplace. For example, in this episode, you'll learn the actual pivot timeline and the rationale behind Dribbble's shift to a marketplace or marketplace-like model, why focusing every product and policy choice on delivering high-intent leads really changed the math for them, and how the measured metrics internally, retention, orders, GMVs, told a very different story than the backlash that was visible on social media. So if you want concrete, out-of-the-trenches lessons on turning attention into reliable revenue without breaking your community, this is a fantastic episode. Do let me know if you enjoyed this bonus episode. You can email me at sjoerd@sharetrap.com, just like Konstantin did, or you can drop a comment in your podcast player or reach out to me on LinkedIn, whatever. I would really like to hear what you all thought. But now, finally, here is my interview with Konstantin Anastasakis of Dribbble. Hi, Konstantin. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really happy. Actually, you reached out. I was going to say really happy you took the time, but actually you reached out. It was really, really cool. You know, this show isn't super popular, so like it's a very niche, so this doesn't happen a lot. Of course, we had a lot of not so super great outreach, but this is super interesting. So really glad you could make the time. Really cool things going on at Dribbble. But before we go into all of that, could you tell us a little bit, just so that the audience has a little bit of a context, about what you did before you ended up as the CEO of Dribbble?
Sure. So I've actually spent most of my career with online marketplaces. First with Fiverr, which is also a marketplace for services. Then Pond5, which is a stock media marketplace. that was acquired by Shutterstock a couple years back. Then between Pond5 and Dribbble, I worked at an online mortgage lender for a year. Really, marketplaces are my love. And so I was very eager when the Dribbble opportunity presented itself. I was very eager to jump back into that type of business, or what I thought could become that type of business.
So that specifically in the opportunity that you saw in Dribbble, I guess.
Yeah, with Dribbble, for years before I arrived, Dribbble had flirted with the idea of becoming a marketplace, and at different points had acquired companies that were themselves marketplaces. Marketplace for services called Crew, that was a few years back. A stock media marketplace called Creative Market. So Dribbble had for a long time thought about the marketplace business model. And frankly, when I actually first started speaking to Dribbble's former CEO and the board about this role, I actually went into that very first conversation thinking that Dribbble already was a marketplace for services. In my defense, that's actually something that I've heard from a lot of folks. You know, when I talk to them about what we've been up to over the last year,
yeah,
a lot of them have that same reaction. Like, I thought you guys were already doing that.
Yeah. Maybe you can actually tell, because not everyone, of course, like if you worked in design with design, you know what Dribbble is, but maybe you could tell, we could go a little bit into what Dribbble actually was like before it had the marketplace angle, before we go into the shift.
Totally. So Dribbble was founded in 2009 by Dan Cederholm and Rich Thornett, who are two great guys that I've had the opportunity to spend some time with. They started Dribbble as an invite-only community. Hmm. It was what they described as a show and tell for designers.
Yeah.
So imagine that it's this private space where professional designers could share what they were working on in its unfinished state. It was very much about a work in progress, as opposed to a portfolio website where you're showing your finished work.
Mm-hmm.
Dribbble was really meant to be your work in progress, and you would get feedback as a designer from your peers. So this is interesting. Can you explain what you were thinking about here? How did you go about this? And you were really meant to show each iteration of the work. And so in that sort of earliest version of Dribbble, which is now 16 years ago, it really was a very tight-knit community.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, Dribbble changed to become, at some point over the subsequent years, it opened up to no longer be invite only. And so now, everyone could join the platform, which led to very rapid growth in Dribbble's user base and website traffic. During that period, and I think this is very relevant context to everything that we've worked on over the past 18 months that I've been with the company.
Mm-hmm.
During that period where Dribbble starts, where the user base starts expanding rapidly, and you have way more designers coming to the platform, uploading tons of examples of their work, it starts to morph into a place where designers would land clients.
Yeah.
And some of the work in progress starts to be replaced by that polished, finished work that demonstrates the designer's capabilities and draws new clients to them. And during that time, because again, Dribbble wasn't actually facilitating those transactions or trying to monetize the lead that the designer was receiving.
Now,
Dribbble pursued a number of different monetization activities during that time, including introducing advertising. So you had a lot of brands that want to put their products in front of designers, advertising on Dribbble, which is still the case, a job board where employers, recruiters could post jobs for designers, and different subscription products. The main subscription being, which we still have today, is a subscription that gives designers higher ranking in search results, advanced profile features, things like that.
Yeah, we used actually Etertrib because I knew, I think I mentioned this when we had our TED also, that Etertrib, we've actually hired, I think, two designers through through Dribbble. I'm not sure, like the first one was hired already 2014, maybe even before I joined the company. But also recently we found a new one through Dribbble, actually. I think I paid some, I don't know, recruitment fee, or I don't remember what was the the plan I was on, so I could actually contact the people. But but yeah, but it, I was also thinking that actually this is, in a way, it's funny that it's not intentional, like, and that you end up being a marketplace or booth, because in a way this is a very clear example of this, one of these categories of like the cold start problem, that like get one side first, right? Like the supply side, like through, like basically get the designers first somehow. And it's quite funny that, yeah, it's such a clear example, but somehow this transition just hadn't happened yet, like to a marketplace.
I think we had orbited the marketplace model for for many years. And I think some of the products touched on it without directly inserting the platform into the transaction the way that the way that we have lately. But the product that you're referring to was a subscription product that recruiters, hiring managers would pay for, that allowed them to search through designer profiles and send messages to, to designers. And it's very interesting because that product, which we've since, this was actually one of the very first things we did last May of 24, was we unpaywalled those features in anticipation of moving to a marketplace, because you can't paywall search and messaging on a platform if you're if you intend to bring the two sides together. And so it's interesting because that product though was an early attempt at monetizing the lead flow that Dribbble was bringing to designers, except the way that we were monetizing that lead flow was by charging this upfront fee to the demand side. And one of the consequences of that was actually a inadvertently throttled lead flow, because there was now an upfront cost to reach out to a designer. And so if you look at it on a line graph, for example, you can see exactly, you'd be able to pinpoint exactly when those features were paywalled.
Okay.
And you can pinpoint when we unpaywalled them.
Okay.
Because again, lead flow is throttled and then it opens back up again.
Yeah.
And that was actually very, you know, I have the benefit of, you know, hindsight and can look at that. But it was actually very, very revealing for us, because that was about the time, you know, I joined in mid or April of 2024. And we could see that very clearly. We had enough distance from when those features were paywalled.
Yeah.
We could see exactly what I just described, this precipitous decline in lead flow. And so between that and between a lot of what I was hearing directly from users, like a lot of the folks who reached out when I first joined the company, a lot of the folks that reached out were talking to me about leads.
Yeah.
I was imagining that the community, you know, I was imagining that a lot of the feedback I would receive from designers would be about social networking features
like that. Hub features somehow, like,
And it was almost exclusively about leads. I used to get this many leads and now I don't. And so, you know, those two, that sort of anecdotal evidence, and then the actual data we had led us to conclude something that I've only come to feel more and more strongly about 18 months later is that ultimately it's all about lead flow.
Yeah.
And if we are bringing high intent qualified leads to the service providers on our platform, everything works. It lifts all boats.
Yeah.
And if we aren't, nothing works.
Yeah.
And I think that there's actually, something, and again, this is, you know, pretty niche dribble thinking now, but I think that there was a, and again, with the benefit of hindsight, I say this, I think that there was a misconception that we held that was designers were here primarily, and this is over the last, call it 5 years, let's say, because again, in the invite only tight knit early dribble days, I don't think that what I'm about to say applies, but I think that there was a misconception that designers were here for the community part of it, the meeting their peers, talking shop with their peers, getting feedback, giving feedback, and that they were here primarily for that. And as a happy accident, they would also land the occasional client.
Yeah.
Whereas what I believe and what we as an organization have point of view that we have is that the reverse is true.
Yeah.
That it's designers are here to land clients. And if they are landing clients on Dribbble, they will invest time in sharing their work and engaging in the community. But the community engagement only comes if they are seeing an actual financial return on the time that they're spending on the platform. Through that lens, I think a lot of what we've done since makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also funny because like what you said earlier about like I was going to mention it because you said like if you bring in high quality leads, you know, then everything will go. But of course, you can only bring in high quality leads if you have high quality design on the other end, right? So this is very much sort of like an interaction between both sides, as with most marketplaces. I mean, like a quality to supply generates quality demand and the other way around. So yeah, that's interesting because I think that is an interesting, I can relate to that with ShareTrip also, that like I think over time, like a company changes quite a bit and not everybody might notice this, even internally. Like a lot of people have come in probably over at different times at Dribbble, and there's people who are like old school who are still in their mind have something like, no, we're a design community. We're here for like, and that works across all levels, whether that is like your like what product features you think are important, how you position it in marketing and advertising and stuff. So I relate. We have gone through similar things at ShareTrip, which is really, really cool. What do you think created the opportunity to make this shift? Because you're saying that like the company has been orbiting around this model. There was maybe, you know, well, you touched already, like maybe people were holding back because they had a different premise, that this was primarily a design thing. What changed that you felt, or that the company is now ready or was now ready to make this shift?
There are a couple things. I think one is the evidence that this business depends primarily on the quantity and quality of leads. That evidence really was stronger than ever, in part because we saw what happened when we paywalled. When lead flow was throttled, all other parts of the business in time were impacted by that.
You mean things like time spent on platform, new designs uploaded, those kind of things?
For instance, you know, I mentioned our pro subscription, which is, it gives designers a higher search ranking, at least at the time. We've now added a lot more to it, but at the time it was higher search rankings and advanced profile features, which are important if you are getting leads. If you're getting leads, it's a very worthwhile investment to rank higher in search. If you are not getting leads, then the ROI is not there for the individual designer. And so we saw a ripple effect throughout the entire business that also impacted how much content was being uploaded by designers to the sites, which impacts website traffic. There was a definite ripple effect that I would attribute specifically to the introduction of those paywalls. And then the reverse is true. When we unpaywalled those features, you saw a positive impact throughout the business. But to answer your question, there was one more evidence, both quantitative and qualitative, because we were hearing this loud and clear from our users. There was more evidence. And then I think a lot of it is actually comes back to what we started with, which was my background. You know, I'm obviously very biased towards a marketplace business model. I sort of intuitively gravitated towards that type of business. I think internally, as I mentioned, there had already been a lot of discussion around the possibility before I arrived, the possibility of, in fact, I remember when I was speaking with the former CEO, Zach, who brought me into the search and is the reason that I'm at Dribbble. He showed me a version of a marketplace strategy that they were intending to explore in 2024. It looked quite different from what we ended up doing, but it was, you know, conceptually the same idea of bringing the two sides together. So I think that you had internally there was already an understanding and an acceptance of the idea that we should take a more active role in bringing together both sides of the transaction. Yep. Then you had me and my bias towards a marketplace model. And I will say, though, that what I thought 18 months ago, what I thought our marketplace would look like is very different from where we are now. And you know, I think I started as much more of a purist because I knew from Fiverr and Pond5,
yeah,
which were platforms that from day one, they started as marketplaces. And so you bring the two sides together, they transact, and you take a revenue share from one or both sides of that transaction.
Yeah.
And that's what you focus on. And so when I came to Dribbble, if you look at the earliest version of our strategy, it's solely focused on transaction fee revenue. How do we increase transaction activity and take transaction fees on those successful transactions? And it's interesting, you know, because those other platforms that I had been at, the sellers in those marketplaces were individuals. Mm-hmm. They were hobbyists. This was their side hustle. Whereas on Dribbble, and this is something that I did not appreciate coming into the role, on Dribbble, many of the quote-unquote sellers or the designers on our platform are not individuals. They might be agencies with hundreds of employees.
All right, wasn't aware of that either, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so it's actually one of the very first conversations I had with a user after I joined Dribbble is an agency based in Poland that has 100 employees. They're many times bigger than Dribbble is, you know, in terms of the size of the organization. And it was actually, that was a very important conversation for me because, you know, I spoke to their CEO who thought about Dribbble and described his company's activity on Dribbble strictly in terms of leads, you know, and he described how they would, how they had full-time employees whose job it was to create and upload work to Dribbble. It was purely a lead source to them. And that was really eye-opening for me because, and this sort of goes back to the, you know, are folks here for the community and then landing clients? Or is it the reverse? Are they doing the community stuff in order to land clients?
Yeah, and also how are those groups represented, right? Like, is this an 80-20 story or is this like a, you know, meaning that like,
totally,
is 20% like that or is it 80% like that or somewhere in between? And
And the reality is that many of our most active users are in fact agencies. Coming back to like how this kind of changed for us, when I started out, I was like, okay, this marketplace will look like the other marketplaces I've worked at.
Yeah, like peer-to-peer almost, like individuals. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And this also plays in later to the sort of the topic of disintermediation. But when you speak to a an agency with hundreds of employees, they have their own workflows. They have many lead sources, and they have a sales process, and they have account managers and account executives, and they have very different needs and expectations than an individual person who is selling their services on Dribbble. And it's interesting because that actually, again, that conversation, and I remember the CEO telling me, you know, we spend X dollars a year on Dribbble. And that was basically the sum of the pro subscriptions that they had for some of their employees. And he said, I would happily spend many times that if
this is what you want to hear. Yeah,
totally. He said, I'd happily spend much more than that if Dribbble was again a reliable lead source for me.
Yeah.
And again, very eye-opening conversation. And we did in time develop products that were really geared towards what we call our designer advertising products. We developed a lineup of products geared towards that type of seller, the agency that can't or won't transact on the platform because they have much more complex workflows, but are very willing to invest in the platform and very willing to help us monetize the leads that we are sending them. And so what we enable these folks to do, including this agency that I was referring to, they advertise, which includes different benefits. Among them, they are free to display their direct contact details mm-hmm. and communicate and transact off platform. If you don't want to advertise, then you stay on the platform and transact, and it's all completely free, but we apply transaction fees to the successful.
What changed? So you unpaywall the recruiter fee. What made you change? Because I just want to get also a little bit to the reception of this among the community. So maybe we can sort of shortly touch on like what changed for the designers basically, and then go into how this was received.
Yeah. So the sequence of events was basically May of last year, we unpaywall search and messaging. Then in September, we introduce our first set of transactional features, which basically allowed a client to send a sort of structured project request and pay, and for a designer to deliver work and get paid. So very basic functionality that you would find in any marketplace for services. At that point, we didn't require any clients or designers to transact on the platform. We made these features available to them to be more convenient than having to transition the conversation to another platform. That was our initial thinking. And in fact, we initially, again, in that sort of that first version of our strategy, we did not anticipate taking the step of actually prohibiting users from taking transactions off platform. We believed that there would be
like enough value in what you provided. Yeah,
exactly. To keep folks on the platform. So to answer your question, early September, we introduced these features, and folks started using them.
Yeah.
And then in March of this year, so about 6 months after we introduced that first set of features, we updated our terms of service to require clients and designers who meet on Dribbble to keep their transactions on Dribbble.
Okay.
With the exception of the designer advertisers that I shared before, who can take transactions off platform.
Yeah, because they share the revenue in a different way, right?
In a different way, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And that's really in a nutshell. Like our thinking is, we want to focus everything we've got. We want to focus all of our resources on generating high intent qualified lead flow for designers, and we have to monetize every single one of those leads. That's our thinking, and it happens in one of those two ways. It's either you are a designer, it's free to join Dribbble. It's free to upload your work. It's free to advertise your services. It's free to receive leads. If you convert those leads, we apply a transaction fee. Or you advertise, you enable us to monetize the leads in a different way, and you can transact on or off the platform as you please. But that's really the thinking.
Yeah, and I already hinted at it, of course, but like we discussed over the course that, you know, there's, you know, internally there's people with maybe different perception of what Dribbble is. Historically, it's been different. So among the user base, they're not all agencies from Poland having 100 people. So there was some pushback that I saw.
Totally. So we announced the update to the terms. And, you know, as an aside, throughout this whole process, from the day we unpaywalled those features through the lead up to introducing the transactional features in September, through the months leading up to the terms of service update, we've been extremely transparent publicly about the thinking behind each of those decisions, the results of those decisions. We've been extremely transparent about it. And in the lead up to our terms of service update, I had written extensively about disintermediation and the risks that it introduced to our clients, to our designers, and to us. But of course, like I'm realistic. I don't think that our users are like pouring over my blog posts to understand the context for each decision. But we tried to explain why we were making this decision, and so. Fast forward to March, we update our terms of service. I think that was on a Monday that we announced it, along with a statement from me explaining the decision. From Monday through Wednesday, maybe, there was a just social media meltdown. You know, I had folks reaching out to me from previous colleagues from previous jobs, or, you know, friends, reaching out to me who had heard about it from, you know, a designer they work with, or they heard about it from the, and so for a few days, for maybe 72 hours, there was a huge, mostly negative reaction on social media to the decision to prohibit disintermediation. And it's interesting because we saw almost no, if you weren't looking at X and Reddit and other platforms, and you were only looking at our data, you would have not seen any indication of any sort of negative reaction. Because about a month after we updated the terms, I shared a lot of this publicly, but a month after we updated the terms, we had retained 99.99% of the users that we had the morning of our announcement. And if you narrow it down to just the, you know, the top 5,000, 1,500 most popular accounts, you were still consistently over 99.5% of our user base. So for all of the chatter about
Dribbble has killed itself,
right? I'm deleting my account, and I'm canceling my pro subscription. We actually saw pro subscription churn decrease in the days after, and in part because one of the additional benefits that we've introduced for pro subscribers is that they don't pay transaction fees on the platform.
Which is
it's less compelling when you don't have to stay on the platform. When you're required to stay on the platform, all of a sudden not paying fees is quite a good benefit. And the way that I reconcile, by the way, the fact that, and I should also say that during this period, we basically see an immediate step function change to positive change to all of our transaction metrics.
Yeah.
So we see between March and May, the business triples the amount of orders, the GMV, and then each stage of the conversion funnel improves. The response rates, as in the rate at which designers are responding to the request they're receiving, the response time, the proposal, everything improves radically. And the way that I reconcile this is that I believe that a lot of the reaction that we saw on social media, the way that I reconcile the negativity that we encountered there and the very positive impacts that we saw on the business, is that I think a lot of those folks aren't actually Dribbble's users, you know, in 2025 are not Dribbble's users. They may have joined, and this is often the case, they may have joined in the early days. And so when they think back about the invite-only community that was so important in their early careers, and then they see the very sort of transactional approach that we're taking today, it's very jarring for them, mm-hmm. you know, and they're nostalgic yeah. for the Dribbble of 2010. But the actual users who are growing the platform today are here for leads. And what we've done over the last year is sort of commit ourselves fully to that, we are going to bring you as many high intent qualified leads as we can. And so I think it's very positively received by the folks that we are actually,
yeah.
you know, that are actually growing the platform today.
Yeah, I think that's always like a real challenge with same as like listening to feature requests and feedback. I remember like some, I don't know, it's already maybe 5 years ago, but you know, this superhuman email, mm-hmm. email company. So they had the founder, he had some hit blog piece, which is about how they found product market fit. And basically what they did is that they asked these like feature, like when people would do feature requests or they did user interviews, but then they weighted them with how they typified them as users. So there's people uh-huh. asking for features who think that like, yeah, like superhuman works for me. But then from the company's perspective, it's like, yeah, they're not our ideal customer, actually.
Totally.
So actually, we're going to pay less attention to this particular feature request because this is just not who we're building for. And the product that we have now is not the product that we want to have. So I think this is always a struggle. Same for ShareTribe, same for, mm-hmm. for most companies who evolve, right?
Yeah.
So maybe we can look a bit. So we discussed the past. We discussed like the recent past slash present. Maybe we can talk a little bit about the future. So like... because you mentioned actually you worked at Fiverr. I hadn't actually even realized this, even though we had a chat prior to preparing for this conversation. But in the marketplace world, there are these sort of eras of like the marketplace model evolving. And, you know, the first one being classified, the Craigslist. And then you have the ones with the transaction, which is sort of marketplace 1.0. And then you get services and then you get all kinds of things on top. But basically what you introduced is still like marketplace 1.0, right? Like you're not... I mean, not to discredit the achievement. But there is a lot more things you could, you know, you could expand on if you look at other marketplaces. So how do you see Dribbble going forward? Like, what would you like to see Dribbble develop into?
Everything that we've done over the last year has been sort of foundational work. Mm-hmm. We frankly, you know, we could spend the next 2 years doing more foundational work because mm-hmm. we are trying to, you know, we are reinventing ourselves as a marketplace decades after Odesk and Elance and even Fiverr yeah. And a lot of these folks.
Respect for that Odesk reference. I think that's one that's long gone. Which was just for the people at home, that's what Upwork used to be called, Emily.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, decades after those companies were founded, we knew going into this process that we weren't going to attempt to replicate all of the functionality that the incumbents have. Hmm. We did, however, need some of the basic infrastructure around buying and selling. But to answer your question, where I see this going is I see Dribbble being in the lead generation business.
Mm.
That's what I want to focus on. And I think that especially with how rapidly generative AI is eating the smaller design task, we have to operate, and we are internally at Dribbble operating already as though the logo design or the landing page design project is gone. You know, and we're really focused on how do we facilitate more complex transactions. And so there are a couple aspects of that. One is, and again, something that I did not know coming into the role that I learned from speaking to these agencies and others who use Dribbble as a lead source. I didn't realize, for instance, that so many of these companies use the design project as a way of meeting the client, but ultimately what they're trying to do is sell them an end-to-end design and development and more solution. Mm-hmm. And so the design aspect of it is just how they first introduce themselves to a client. But in terms of the value that it represents to them, it's a small fraction. It's the development side of it that's much more lucrative for them. And
what do you mean exactly with the development side? Like, are we talking about, for example, coding a website?
Exactly. So okay, it's
developing as a sort of software developer part. Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Got it.
Yeah, exactly. So you'll have, for instance, you'll have a buyer, what we call a client. A client on Dribbble might send a request for UI design work. They'll reach out to a particular agency who will then say, absolutely. And we can also actually do the implementation
work. Build it for you. Yeah.
And so and that might represent for them 60, 70, 80% of the project value. Many of our designers on Dribbble, not just the agencies, the individuals as well, especially when you have products like Webflow and Wix and others, they offer both the design and build services. And so one thing that we are running towards is how do we make that more obvious to clients that Dribbble is a place where they not only find design but also development services. And how do we make it obvious to the designers on the platform that they should be talking as well about their development capabilities?
Yeah.
And the great thing about this, and actually one of the things that I love about marketplaces in general, is that the sellers in your marketplace will always surprise you with how they use your platform to make money.
Yeah, totally.
We've seen with the various features that we've introduced, we've seen designers offering development services and advertising their development services. And for example, we introduced a feature a few months ago that allows designers to advertise sort of predefined services, which has, you know, become table stakes, I think, for Fiverr and Upwork and others.
Packages or whatever.
Exactly. So without any direction from Dribbble, many of the services that were created were development services, which I love to see. We're also creating marketing services, but I love to see the sellers in a marketplace use the features you give them to explain to you what you should actually do to help them earn more. So we're racing towards development and then beyond. You know, how do we start to bring designers, clients who have much larger budgets, who are thinking about the entire project? We also, and this sort of goes hand in hand with how do we bring clients to Dribbble that represent much larger companies? So at the moment, most of the clients, most of the demand in our marketplace comes from, you'll see a lot of startups and small businesses. You'll see a lot of that, but then you'll also see a Salesforce, a Meta, an Amazon, with much larger budgets, looking for much more complex projects. We want to bring in those types of leads. We want to make more of a concerted effort to bring in those types of leads and to help the designers on Dribbble sell not just design, but also design adjacent services. I don't believe we'll ever offer, I mean, ChatGPT and other products have made this type of work obsolete, but we won't be offering, data entry services.
No.
We will absolutely push into development and product management and beyond.
Yeah. So basically like digital product development, sort of end-to-end digital product development.
Exactly. That is
interesting, especially I want to touch on that last part that you said before we start rounding off, because that's what I was thinking like during the course of this conversation, like coming again back to sort of the basics that like the path that Dribbble has followed is like you have built up this one side of the market, like the highest quality, you know, like often investors and marketplace experts say that like, and this is also something that ShareTribe that we're trying to hammer in again and again, even though we are making a product that builds marketplaces, that the product of your marketplace is liquidity, right? The product of your marketplace is not the technical platform that you're offering. It's about the strength of the network and your ability to bring it together. And so to me, it's actually kind of logical that if you look at, you know, if you would draw, like a quality X axis, that you have the top quality designers. Like at least this is also my personal experience, that when we were looking for a designer, where do you find good freelance designers? Well, unfortunately, no disrespect, but not on Fiverr and also likely not on Upwork. I feel that that is in a different sort of echelon of the like quality slash price range. And so you have already the top quality, you know, let's say bespoke supply side. So it only makes sense that you, to me at least, like that you start focusing on, let's bring in more of the, you know, top dollar demand side, because apparently, you know, they are a natural match.
So I do believe that, again, that, you know, we need to focus on the demand side and that makes the whole machine work. But you're absolutely right that we, you know, our jumping off point was this platform that had some of the best designers on the planet on the platform already.
Yeah.
Which makes in one sense, you know, and I think about this like for all of the negativity or the friction that we encountered by making this pivot. I think that it is a price that you'd be willing to pay given the breadth and depth, the caliber of design talent that you have on your platform. Actually, you know, one of the interesting things, this took me a while to, again, as someone who loves marketplaces, this one took a while to kind of sink in. I'd spoken to, as we sort of began this journey last year, I spoke to a number of designers who were, even before we updated our terms, just when we had first introduced the transactional features, a number of designers who were just very skeptical or critical of those features. And at that point, I couldn't understand, because I said, you know, these are optional features. Like, why would... And over time, I realized that what they were reacting to was the idea of a marketplace itself that they did not want to participate in, even though they wanted leads, they wanted clients, and they wanted Dribbble to be a source of clients. They didn't want Dribbble to be explicitly, outwardly a marketplace, and they themselves didn't want to be sellers in a marketplace. It was in a sense, it was almost beneath them to be in the sort of the mosh pit, you know, of IFO and reviews and ratings and how do I rank. They didn't want to be in that, and that took a while for me to understand and to appreciate. But it's an example. You know, we've internally, you know, we think about it like the way that a luxury brand might not want to be on Amazon.
No,
it
just, exactly.
It diminishes their brand in a sense.
And I can see that also, like I've also my own experience with designers, that there are people who, designers who really see themselves as, and I'm exaggerating, but like sort of as artists, they're unique suppliers. And so they want to be chosen for their uniqueness. And of course, the association with the marketplace model on Amazon is of course that, it potentially, and in many places, you know, like look at Uber or whatever, it turns to like race to the bottom. Who's able to provide this at the cheapest price? And if you're not careful, then that is also the step, like the starting point for buyers, right? They are just looking out for that. Hey, I just want to thank you for your time. This is really, really great conversation. I think we covered over everything that we wanted to cover, where you see Dribbble in the future, quality is your most competitive edge, you know, full-fledged product, digital product development marketplace eventually. Super cool about the background and that you openly share, you know, the struggles with implementing this. And I hope that this is this episode will be a great valuable lesson for other people in Dribbble's position or people just looking into, let's say, the services marketplace angle. I think this will be a fantastic episode, just like quickly reminding this back in my head before I start button. So thanks a lot for your time. Thanks a lot for sharing all of this with us. And maybe you can quickly still advertise Dribbble. Where can people find Dribbble in case they haven't heard about them? And where can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So first off, I appreciate you having me, and anyone who listens to this and wants to talk more is very welcome to reach out. Dribbble is the leading platform to discover designers, their work, their services that they offer. Dribbble.com. It's with three B's though, and that might trip people up. But again, as you said, I think we could keep this going for hours, and I hope we talk about it more in the future. But this was great. Mm-hmm.
Yes, thanks for your time and take care.
Thank you for listening to Two-Sided, the Marketplace podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you really liked it, please give us a rating or a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. If you got inspired to build your own marketplace, go visit www.sharetribe.com. It's the fastest way to build a successful online marketplace business.